is, oh, and we do ask you to adhere to our time limits on oral argument. Some of the judges may not, but the lawyers are supposed to. The first case is Jimenez versus Wood County, number 0940892, and we'll hear first from Mr. Iglesias.
May it please the court, counsel. This rehearing en banc arises from a visual body cavity search that was conducted on the plaintiff in the Wood County Jail after she was arrested for the Class A misdemeanor of hindering apprehension. Plaintiff was arrested for hiding her husband in the trunk of her car after he was being pursued by TABC agents. The crime for which she was arrested was is punishable by up to a year in jail and a fine of up to $4,000 or both. At the time, it was Wood County's policy to conduct these strip body cavity searches of all incoming arrestees who were brought in for a Class B misdemeanor or above. Additionally, the record shows that this search was conducted on the plaintiff due to reasonable suspicion that the searching officer had surrounding the circumstances of the plaintiff's arrest, that if she was arrested for hiding her husband, what else might she also be hiding? The plaintiff sued Wood County and alleging that her Fourth Amendment rights were violated subject to the search. And after a trial on the merits, the district judge instructed the jury as a matter of law that the Class A misdemeanor of hindering apprehension is not a minor, or it was a minor offense for the purposes of the Fourth Amendment analysis. The issue before this court today concerns the court's current interpretation of Bell versus Wolfish. According to the court's current interpretation of that case, a law enforcement officer may conduct a search on someone arrested for a minor offense only if they have reasonable suspicion that that person might be possess contraband. There's a growing trend among the circuits, however, in the 11th, 9th, and 3rd circuits to interpret Bell versus Wolfish literally and not require reasonable suspicion before conducting these types of searches, regardless of the charges on which these the people being searched are brought in. The second issue for this rehearing concerns Wood County's alternative argument. Even if the court were to continue applying its non-literal interpretation of Bell, the offense for which the plaintiff was arrested simply is not a minor offense for the purposes of the Fourth Amendment analysis. And as I'm sure the court knows, the seminal case with respect to Fourth Amendment searches is Bell versus Wolfish, which was decided by the Supreme Court in 1979. The plaintiffs in Bell were a group of detainees in a detention center which housed not only persons charged with crimes, and it housed also persons who weren't charged with crimes at all, but rather were being kept in safekeeping and custody as witnesses. That detention center had a policy of conducting visual body cavity searches after every contact visit that a detainee would have with someone from the outside. Bell versus Wolfish doesn't contain any sort of a requirement of reasonable suspicion, and it doesn't contain any sort of analysis on the charges or even the lack of charges that the persons subjected to these searches have were subjected to. The 11th and 9th and 3rd circuits in the recent years have reinterpreted their previous analysis of Bell versus Wolfish and taken the actual meaning of Bell versus Wolfish more literally. They've noted that Bell versus Wolfish didn't require reasonable suspicion and didn't create or draw any sort of a distinction with respect to the charges with which these people were detained in the facility, or even the lack of charges. The same factors which weigh in favor of the 11th and 9th and 3rd circuits reevaluation of Bell and literal interpretation of Bell also weigh in favor of this court's reanalysis and potential literal interpretation of Bell as well. The driving policy force behind this reanalysis and behind this literal interpretation of Bell is the universally accepted policy of maintaining and promoting the safety of jails. The Supreme Court has repeatedly taken judicial notice in Farmer versus Brennan and in Block versus Rutherford that jails are inherently dangerous places. And Bell versus Wolfish takes notice of this well. Jails are inherently dangerous places, and jails are places where people try to smuggle in contraband. Block versus Rutherford took judicial notice of the fact that people try to smuggle in contraband to jails. And it's overwhelmingly necessary to prevent this sort of smuggling. And the types of searches that a literal interpretation of Bell versus Wolfish would allow would prevent, would largely assist in law enforcement officers in preventing these smuggling of contraband for the safety not only of the detainee themselves, the other inmates, but also for the safety of law enforcement officers who are there. Also, Your Honors, even if this court were to continue its current interpretation of Bell, the search, which is at issue in this case, was simply not unreasonable for the purposes of the court's current Fourth Amendment analysis. As I mentioned earlier, the court's current Fourth Amendment analysis draws a distinction between major and minor offenses. The evidence here in this case shows, and also common experience show, that this Class A misdemeanor, which the Texas legislature has assigned a possible punishment range of up to a year in jail and a $4,000 fine, simply can't be considered minor for the purposes of this court's current analysis, or really for any purposes. And for that reason, Your Honors, in conclusion, the clear and literal interpretation of Bell, the Wood County would respectfully request that this court would apply such a literal interpretation to Bell and allow the sorts of searches on all incoming arrestees who are being introduced into jails. And alternatively, we would ask this court to hold that the offense for which the plaintiff was arrested wasn't a minor offense as a matter of law. And I'm prepared at this point to field any questions you might have.
How did Wood County come up with its policy?
Well, Your Honor, I believe the record shows that the current policy that Wood County had, the policy that Wood County had at the time of the litigation was one that had been in place previously and one that had proven to be workable at that particular point. And as I mentioned earlier, the policy was to conduct these sorts of searches not on people who were brought in on Class C misdemeanors, which are fine-only offenses that don't subject them to any jail time.
So does Wood County want to, is it your principal object here to change the law but have this court approve your current policy, or is it to broaden your authority to allow strip searches of Class C misdemeanor offenders?
Well, Your Honor, the object here is to broaden the court's current interpretation of Bell versus Wolfish to allow these types of searches to be conducted on all persons who are actually brought into a jail to be housed there.
So, and you would overturn this court's decision in Watt versus Richardson and Kelly versus Foti?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe that those cases are cases which do require a reasonable suspicion for minor offenses, but the policy behind the literal interpretation of Bell is clear. Law enforcement officers and jail administrators are required by law to maintain the safety of their facilities. It's their job to maintain the safety for the detainee.
For anybody who is arrested for interference with railroad property, unlawful distribution of satellite TV device, unauthorized practice of law, would be subject to a strip search.
Yes, Your Honor, and the evidence in this case shows
a
that
lawyer. A lawyer who has been disbarred and is practicing law, you've got to strip search him.
Well, for the safety of that lawyer and the safety of the facility itself, that's what the literal interpretation of bail requires. I'm sorry, sir?
What about the Fourth Amendment? Does that count at all?
It does, Your Honor. It does. And the Fourth Amendment, the factors that are iterated in bail are, first of all, the scope of the intrusion, the manner of the search that was conducted, the justification for the intrusion, and the place where that search was conducted.
What is the justification and intrusion of somebody who is engaged in an unauthorized practice of law?
The justification...
And also, Bell indicated that this is the most serious intrusion that you can possibly have, is the strip search that you're performing.
Yes, so, Your Honor.
What justifies this total disregard of the Fourth Amendment rights in the most egregious way for someone who is engaged in unauthorized practice of law?
Well, Your Honor, first of all, you're right in that Bell doesn't minimize the scope of this intrusion. It's a big step. But the security of the facility, the security of the people within the facility, the Supreme Court and this court, time after time.
What were the facts in this case? Was she entered into the general population? Whom did she have contact with?
The record shows that the plaintiff had contact with other detainees there, and she was entered into the population of the jail in the secured area of the Wood County Jail.
She was what now?
She was entered into the population of the jail, into the secured area.
General population.
It was in the secured area of the jail, and the record is unclear whether or not it was actually the term general population was used.
What do you do with the fact that Wolfish applied only to contact visits?
Well, Wolfish did apply only to contact visits, but the 11th Circuit in Powell, which is cited in our brief, specifically discusses that the fact that Wolfish only deals with contact visits and essentially equates a contact visit and the opportunities that someone would have to smuggle contraband into the jail in a contact visit are so much greater when that person is coming into the jail from the outside. The opportunities that a person has to smuggle contraband in a contact visit are far more limited.
What you're essentially saying is that anybody who is arrested for any offense that comes into the jail has no Fourth Amendment rights.
No, Your Honor. No, Your Honor. That's
what Fourth Amendment rights.
What do they have?
Well, they have the ability to have a justified, reasonable. They have the freedom from unreasonable searches. The fact of the matter is that the searches here, with a literal interpretation of bail, aren't unreasonable.
But literal interpretation of bail is a contact visit.
Yes, Your Honor, but bail does not require in any way reasonable suspicion. Bail does not require in any way any sort of a dichotomy or any sort of a distinguishing between minor offenses and major offenses.
It doesn't. Well, at a minimum, it requires contact with some other prisoner or jail personnel, does it not? Or an expectation that that's about to occur?
It does require expectation.
So what does the record say about three things? How long did she have to... And what opportunity did she have to put something in a body cavity from the time that, in between the time that she was seen by the police and then arrested? When was she, did she actually have contact with other inmates, and what was her contact with other prison personnel?
Well, addressing your second two questions first, Your Honor, the record shows that the plaintiff did have contact with other inmates. She had, she discussed in her testimony a lady with whom she was detained there in a cell. She every 30 minutes, the Texas jail standards require that detention officers check on inmates, and she was in the Wood County Jail for I believe the record shows approximately over 12 hours. So during that time, she had many opportunities to have contact with jail officials themselves.
Mr. Gillespie, yes, let me, I mean, as I understand the record in this case, this was decided as a matter of law because there was a legal determination that it was a minor offense. Assume for me that we do change our rule and we use the Wolfish factors. Is the record there to make that determination on the record before us at this time, to consider all the four or five factors in Wolfish?
It is there, Your Honor, and three of those four factors that are discussed in Wolfish aren't at issue here. The scope of the intrusion, that's something that everyone agrees on. The place where the search was conducted, it was conducted there in a private restroom in the Wood County Jail, and also the manner in which it was conducted.
Yeah, Mr. Iglesias, it seems to me that there are, you know, and I think Judge Jolly is absolutely correct to point out the distinctions between Wolfish and what we have here. This is not the MCC. This is a county jail that has that inmates may be of totally different character than the inmates in the Metropolitan Correction Center in New York City. And I don't know to what extent we have the flavor of whether or not Wolfish would apply, given the distinction of these two facilities. And given, again, I think Dolly correctly points out that this is a visitation type of situation, and it's a little bit different, though the other circuits have gone that way. And I ask both sides this. Do we have a record upon which to consider those factors? And if not, then I would presume that we need to send this back for that determination, if we do change the standard.
Well, Your Honor, I believe that the record does permit this court to actually determine the four factors that are considered in Wolfish, and the only factor that's considered in that's really at issue here is the justification, and the evidence here in the record shows that Wood County itself had several incidences of people trying to smuggle in contraband, drugs, weapons, that sort of thing. And I do believe that the record is there, Your Honor, to make the determination here in this court.
I believe your red light is on.
Yes, correct? Ma'am.
Yes. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Davis.
Please, the court, counsel. Your Honor, there's a couple of issues that I would like to address in some of the questioning that was made earlier. For Chief Justice Jones, Madam Justice, if you made a determination that you'd like to keep the current policy or the policy involving everything above a Class C misdemeanor was searched, then I think that is certainly one of the things that we would ask the court to consider if you believe that to have been a lawful policy. Additionally, we are arguing that the Wolfish standard as interpreted by the 11th Circuit, the 3rd Circuit, and the 9th Circuit also be adopted by this circuit. But either way, Your Honor, we're happy with either way the court goes on those two issues.
Well, what do you do with the fact that in Bell, as I understand it, the inmates had at least gone before some magistrate? None of them were mere arrestees.
You know, Your Honor, I'm very glad that you brought that point up. Although the record is really silent on whether or not there were any people who had been arrested by federal officials and were brought in for a short term prior to going to a magistrate and being arraigned, we don't really know that from the record in Bell or from the decision in Bell. So we're not sure on that point. But as far as the judicial determination is concerned,
the judges said so. I thought one of the opinions said so.
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I could be wrong, but I don't recall it from my reading.
Okay.
Does the record reflect whether the lady was frisked? Usually a police officer makes an arrest and frisks somebody. Was she frisked?
Frisked at the scene of the arrest?
Yes.
She was arrested by TABC, which is another entity separate and apart from the county. I don't believe the record has any indication of whether or not she was frisked.
Would it be a customary thing to frisk them?
Your Honor, it would be a customary thing to frisk them, Judge Benavides.
She was frisked, and the odds, there's not a high likelihood with respect to weapons, so I guess then you'd be worried about contraband.
Well, respectfully, I disagree, Your Honor. As the record indicates in this case, during the strip search process at the Wood County Jail, weapons were discovered during the strip search process previously, as well as drugs. And unfortunately nowadays, and the record's very clear on this as well from our expert witness.
Yes, but the whole point, the reason we're distinguishing strip searches from other kinds of searches is I thought that these involved visual body cavity. I mean, A, changing clothes in front of the police, and B, visual body cavity. And you say there's evidence that people who were just arrested somehow had an opportunity to stick weapons in their privates?
Yes, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. The testimony before the court below was that individuals who had gone through the strip search process had smuggled in drugs and had smuggled in weapons, razor blades before, Your Honor. When an individual is pulled over in a car, or in this particular case, Ms. Jimenez had time to hide her husband in the trunk of her car. She could have hidden anything on her body.
Okay, let me ask you this question.
Yes, sir.
To ask us to change the policy, or how did you preserve the error? You made no objection to the instruction that the jury had to find reasonable suspicion in this case. So how did you preserve the error that you and I are entitled to vacate this judgment in favor of the plaintiff on a ground that you did not object to?
Judge Jolly, the situation in this particular case is that the existing law in the Fifth Circuit at the time was a reasonable suspicion standard. We argued the 11th Circuit case that had come out in our pretrial hearing for our jury pattern or jury instructions. But bottom line, when you come up before a panel in this court, if you're going to argue for a change in the law, the only time to raise it and the right time to raise it is before that panel, and then that panel has to send it en banc.
But you didn't actually argue that in the pretrial conference where the objections were made. You only made one objection at the pretrial conference, didn't you, which was about the minor offense. You did not object and say the 11th Circuit has held something different. Judge, you need to submit it in the alternative. We think that there's going to be a ground for no reasonable suspicion. Instead, you said there was reasonable suspicion, which is what your colleague here argued as well.
Judge Elrod, actually, at the time that we were allowed to object to the jury charge, that was during the trial. At the pretrial conference was when the magistrate judge, Judge Everingham, had considered our arguments about what to place into the jury charge.
But you submitted a joint jury charge that included reasonable suspicion, didn't you, sir?
One of them included reasonable suspicion, but we broke that apart. There were also highlighted areas that requested additional instructions that weren't agreed to.
And at the charge conference, no objection was made.
The pretrial was a charge conference, Your Honor.
Did you ever make an objection that you were entitled as a matter of law to judgment because it was reasonable under Wolfish?
Your Honor, there was no objection.
You're making this argument about literal Wolfish. If Wolfish is so literal, why didn't you tell the judge literally under Wolfish there's no cause of action here?
Your Honor, under what the Fifth Circuit had at the time, under what this court had said at the time, the judge instructed the jury panel on what this court had told the judge to instruct the jury panel.
But you didn't argue that there had been an intervening change in law with the 11th Circuit's opinion and the court that you might want to preserve that for the future.
Your Honor, we did argue that in the pretrial conference.
You didn't.
And submitted it to Judge Everingham at the pretrial conference. We did not object at the time the jury charge was presented.
It was not argued to the trial judge at the time the jury was charged.
No.
And it's not on record anywhere that you have an objection?
Yes, Your Honor. It's in the pretrial conference that we brought that.
You objected to the charge.
Yes, Your Honor.
You're saying as a matter of law there's no illegal search here. Yours was based upon the charge. What did you want the charge to say?
Your Honor, what the charge should have said, the court determined as a matter of law that hindering apprehension was a minor offense. If you look at it in context, Bell makes no distinction between minor offenses and serious offenses. And in light of that, Your Honor, Bell also indicates that there is no individual determination of reasonable suspicion. And our objection, Your Honor, was aimed at the fact that this is, number one, not a minor offense. No distinction can be made between the offenses under Bell v. Wolfish. And as a result, no reasonable suspicion can be required.
You did. I've got the record here, and Mr. Davis said just one objection, Your Honor, to the instructions. Just one objection. The court finding that this was a minor offense as a matter of law. For the record purposes, we would object.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's all you said.
Yes, Your Honor. At that time, it is, Your Honor.
Well, what other time did you complain about the reasonable suspicion requirement as opposed to the minor offense instruction?
That was in pretrial, Your Honor, before the magistrate judge, Judge Everingham.
Would that preserve error?
Your Honor, I don't think there's a question of preserving error here. Here's the difference. The Fifth Circuit law at the time was clear. The time to argue that this court change its existing law is when you come up before this court.
Now, where did you get that?
Where did you get that idea?
Your Honor, I believe that if you're going to argue for a change of Fifth Circuit law, and that's exactly what occurred in the 11th Circuit, in the 3rd Circuit, and in the 9th Circuit.
You have to preserve your error, or if you don't have it.
Your Honor, I believe that we did preserve our error in this case. We objected to the...
Your error seems to be that this is not a minor offense.
Yes, Your Honor, that is the objection that we made at that trial.
So the panel should have looked at to just see whether this was a minor offense or not.
No, Your Honor, I disagree. I think that the panel should have looked at this case to make a determination as to whether or not it should change the law in this case.
The panel is certainly free to make any kind of determination like that.
Yes, Your Honor.
We have prisoners that make arguments to us all the time with virtually no hope of the law changing, but they do it to preserve their claims, and ultimately a lot of times the law does change. So why would law enforcement be inhibited from having made an argument to the trial judge?
Your Honor, we made the argument. We submitted jury instructions along those lines,
but
and
Judge
we made Charlie the 11th
just read you the record. The only thing in the record is what's stated.
It's what's stated in the record. Our objection to the jury charge, Your Honor, is what is stated in the record.
Is it your position that if it were a tactile search, that there would have to be either probable cause or reasonable suspicion, or what are you carving out that area?
By tactile, Your Honor, could you elaborate?
I mean, if they touch rather than visual.
Oh, yes, Your Honor. I think it would be totally different. I think that if you touch an inmate, if you do any type of body cavity probe, I think in that situation you'd have to have a court order to do that. I don't think that you can physically touch inmates. And the search is the same as the search in Bell v. Wolfish. The search is the same as the search that occurred in the Bull case out of the 9th Circuit.
So, I mean, are you really saying that the lady who was brought in because her dog wasn't on a leash in Richardson, Texas, mm-hmm. and who was calling her neighbor to make bail because she had gone walking without her wallet, should be strip searched?
You know, Your Honor, let me say it this way, and I think this is the best way that I can possibly phrase it. If there's a bad arrest, then they have a separate cause of action under the Fourth Amendment for the arrest. But if my daughter's arrested on even a minor offense brought into the jail, I would rather have her strip searched, Your Honor, than placed into a holding cell or
even if it's OD. Even if it's the Hedwig Village Jail in next to Hunter's Creek, which has a population of a few thousand people, and the jail has one or two, it looks like Mayberry. Even then.
Your Honor, even in Mayberry, you can be subjected to people who have drugs on their person.
I would have trusted Sheriff Andy Griffith, but I don't trust most sheriffs.
Well, I would trust Andy, too, Your Honor, and I'd probably even trust Barney. But bottom line, Your Honor, if it's a choice between having the right to be secure and safe in a jail facility, under Texas law, before people are arraigned, and actually under Supreme Court precedent under Riverside, you have 48 hours to arraign anybody.
Well, let me just throw one thing out, but mm-hmm. your time is up, so you can address it on rebuttal. All the circuits had this reasonable suspicion requirement until about 2 years ago. And had there been a demonstrable decline in prison security because of failure to observe bail, it would seem to me there might be some evidence of that. So I'd like you to speculate about that when you get up for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. All righty, Mr. Tooley.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Mr. Davis, Mr. Iglesias. We are here today about a strip search, what the Supreme Court has characterized as one of the most grievous offenses against personal dignity and common decency. The record in this case shows Ms. Jimenez and her husband opened a small neighborhood bar in Wood County near Lake Fork out there, a bass fishing lake. Mr. Jimenez, a former Los Angeles officer and former special U.S. Marshal, tried to coordinate the opening of the bar with Sheriff Daughter at Wood County. He was rebuffed. They opened the bar. On the very opening night of the bar, they were raided by TABC agents and Wood County Sheriff's officers. The record reflects that one of the officers present made the statement, we're going to shut this Mexican bar down. Some arrests were made, citations were issued, a complaint was made to TABC about the conduct of the agents, resulting in the internal investigation. 6 months later, New Year's Eve night, another raid occurs. Here, the record shows Mr. Hernandez had a confrontation with, a verbal confrontation with the undercover officers that were there prior to the raid. He goes back, he sees cars coming in, fearing for his safety, literally justifiably so, he has an attack of stupid and hides in a car trunk. Mr. Hernandez is arrested. Ms. Hernandez was arrested on the suspicion that she had assisted with this. They were both taken to jail. Those charges were later dismissed, the record reflects. Ms. Hernandez was strip searched at the jail. This was New Year's Eve night in Wood County, Texas, a small rural East Texas county. And in response to the court's question, I would suggest it's much closer to Mayberry than the metropolitan jails we see in these other circuit cases. She was placed in a holding tank, bonded out the next day, as is typical on a small county like that for charges like this. Appellants in this case would ask this court to do away with the reasonable suspicion standard before conducting a strip search of an incoming arrestee, such as Ms. Hernandez, for any charge, regardless, major, minor, felony, whatever. Appellants themselves, the Wood County Sheriff's Office, changed their strip search policy after this incident, but before the trial. They changed their policy to require reasonable suspicion before strip searching incoming arrestees. That is the current policy in Wood County, and it was changed after this incident.
What would you do with the policy now? How would you, in which the arrest a...
Excuse me?
I thought it was uninterrupted. Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me. I thought you were... Pardon me.
I'm sorry. They asked me to waive that, Your Honor, and I could see no reason for that. I couldn't bring myself to do that.
A wise decision.
Bell allowed strip search of inmates, not incoming arrestees, but inmates in a penal institution, a federal jail holding facility in New York City, after contact visits. Bell allowed those searches on something less than probable cause. They didn't say what that less was. For over 30 years now, all of the circuits, and up until 2 years ago, all of the circuits held that something less was individual suspicion of some sort, cause to believe, mostly reasonable suspicion, including this and four or five other circuits. Only about 2 years ago did we have the debate arise and the question arise of whether less means nothing, which is the holding of the three circuit cases that appellants rely upon. They would allow strip searches of incoming arrestees with no individualized suspicion whatsoever. It's our contention and the contention of the majority of the circuits in this country that less is not nothing. It is something. Reasonable suspicion is that standard and is the standard applied in this circuit. Now, reasonable suspicion is not a lot, but it is something. Law enforcement has applied the standard of reasonable suspicion for over 40 years, and it works. It's worked very well since Terry versus Ohio. Officers apply reasonable suspicion hundreds and thousands of times a day across this country. Every time they make a traffic stop, every time they detain somebody, every time they frisk somebody in the field, the standard of reasonable suspicion is applied. It's not arbitrary. It's not artificial. It's a real standard, and it works, and it's effective. Reasonable suspicion is applied in jails across this country as a criteria before conducting a strip search of an incoming arrestee. It's a real standard, and it works. It's adequate to protect those officers in that jail. I think this court knows I would not be here arguing for any standard that compromises officer safety, and I don't do that today. Mr. Davis was asked a question about what would he think if his daughter were arrested and subjected to this procedure. Well, I would turn that around. What would I think if my son, who is a county jailer, relied on reasonable suspicion? I think the standard is entirely adequate to protect him and those other jailers and protect this jailer's security. The arbitrary standard before the court is the blanket policy that appellants would ask this court to adopt. The bottom line is reasonable suspicion works. It's been in place in many other contexts, including this one, and it works. It's certainly adequate to protect the jail and security interests that are in play in any of these cases. If it's eliminated, where does that lead us? Where does that lead the country? Where does that lead our jurisprudence? Appellants would ask this court to ignore individualized suspicion and simply rule strip searches are okay because of the interest of institutional security. If the security of the institution is all that matters, how far does that go? Does the security of the institution allow strip searches for people entering other government buildings, entering this building? Do we eliminate reasonable suspicion as a criteria for detentions, for frisks in the field? I don't think the Fourth Amendment supports such a result. I would suggest to the court that appellant's position has the potential for taking us down that road, down that slippery slope. Appellants refer to the discretion awarded to jailers by the Bell opinion. Now, that's a reading from the Powell case. That's not in the Bell opinion. Bell dealt with a number of different claims, all kinds of claims arising from that jail up in New York City. Most of those claims were dealt with under a due process analysis involving a reasonable relationship test. Were the security measures in place reasonably related to the need to maintain security in the jail? That's the analysis that was under the due process case, under the due process claims in Bell. It was in that analysis that Bell mentioned seven times the deference to the judgment of jail officials in deciding those issues. They never mentioned the deference to jail officials concept in the three-page portion of Bell, which addressed the Fourth Amendment claim. I would suggest to the court that taking the deference mentioned in Bell from the due process analysis, injecting it into the Fourth Amendment balancing test that Bell gives us, skews that test to the point that the Fourth Amendment becomes hollow. It allows the courts adopting that approach to simply give total deference to jail officials and let the jail officials decide what's constitutional and what's not. We would suggest that the Fourth Amendment doesn't contemplate that type of analysis. I think that's an error that permeates the Three Circuit cases and the argument that appellants make in this case. They rely too much so on the deference to jail officials and institutional security to the exclusion of all the other balancing factors, including the severity of the intrusion involved in a search such as this. The Bell case, as was pointed out earlier, is distinct from this case. Bell involved inmates who were in a jail for all sorts of reasons. Most of those reasons involved some sort of judicial determination of the validity of their incarceration. Those inmates were being moved from their cells to contact visits and then back to their cells. They were searched after those contact visits. This case, Ms. Manis had no judicial review of her arrest. And indeed, that was the basis for that arrest, was hotly contested in this case, but those claims were settled prior to trial. If indeed the arresting officers were doing their job, she would have been frisked. Any inmate coming in, any detainee coming into a county jail, if the arresting officer is doing his or her job, there's going to be a frisk that takes place before they get in. Furthermore, Bell did not preclude the requirement of reasonable suspicion. Bell simply said something less than probable cause and did not identify what that less is. Most of the circuits have, for 30-some-odd years now, interpreted the less as some sort of individualized suspicion. This circuit and others have interpreted as reasonable suspicion, as being a handy, convenient, workable, familiar standard which is less than probable cause. Officers are familiar with reasonable suspicion. They apply it every day. The courts are familiar with it. They apply it all the time. It works. There's no evidence in this case of a smuggling problem in this Wood County jail. Their expert, Mr. Pinkerton, spoke generically about the danger of smuggling in other jails in the Smith County jail where he worked, but there was no specific evidence of smuggling in this particular jail. The cases, the circuit cases, which appellants rely upon, Powell was decided in 08, Bull after that, Florence after that. The Powell case out of the 11th Circuit, the Bull case out of the 9th Circuit, and the Florence case out of the 3rd Circuit. During that same time, three other circuits went the other way. In 2008, the 2nd Circuit in the Heartline case, and these are in our brief, held that reasonable suspicion is required for strip searching misdemeanor detainees. Also in 1908, the 10th Circuit in the Archuleta, if I'm pronouncing that right, case, held that reasonable suspicion is required for strip searching someone arrested on a domestic violence warrant. In 09, the 8th Circuit in the Cerna case held that inmate searches require individualized suspicion of some sort before a strip search is conducted. We would submit that the trend that appellants allege there is not there. It's an aberration. The majority of the circuits have and continue to hold that individualized suspicion, typically reasonable suspicion, is required for strip searches. Bell involved, again, inmates which were being moved within the jail. Fulton involved Metropolitan County Jail in Atlanta. Bull involved Metropolitan Jail in San Francisco, the 9th Circuit case. Bull involved prisoners who were being moved from one type of facility into the more longer-term general population, from holding cells into general population. The 9th Circuit in Bull expressly left alone decisions which required reasonable suspicion for arresting detainees, including reasonable suspicion of the Los Angeles Police Department, the Kennedy versus LAPD case, where they were strip searching felons who were arrested. Bull, a case had stricken that down because it didn't allow or it didn't require reasonable suspicion. Bull left that case alone. The 9th Circuit case in Bull, if that opinion were applied to this case, would go the other way because Bull left the circumstances of this case alone. Here we have Ms. Jimenez, who was arrested on a Class A misdemeanor, brought into a county jail with no arraignment, no judicial review of the circumstances, presumably frisked by the arresting officer. The other cases involve metropolitan jails, inmates who have been previously incarcerated, a different circumstance, a different balancing test. Powell even makes, and Mr. Davis alluded to this, makes the assumption that, well, somebody who's arrested might smuggle something in. If the officer stops them, they may have time to hide something. I would submit to the court that that statement is simply not supported by experience or common sense. If I'm making a traffic stop, I don't see any way somebody's going to be able to hide something in such a way that it takes a strip search to find it. Typically, the officers are going to see that kind of movement, and they'll have reasonable suspicion to make whatever search they need to make in that circumstance. As I stated, the other circuits go the other way. The other circuits follow this circuit. The First Circuit requires reasonable suspicion. The Second Circuit requires reasonable suspicion. The Fourth Circuit, in the Logan case, relied on, in the previous cases in this circuit, involving a DWI arrestee. The Logan case requires cause to believe something is hidden there before you do a strip search. The Sixth Circuit requires reasonable suspicion of arrestees for minor offenses. The Seventh Circuit rejected a blanket strip search policy because it didn't allow for individualized suspicion in a misdemeanor arrestee situation. The Eighth Circuit requires some level of individual suspicion. The Tenth Circuit requires reasonable suspicion to strip search a detainee. 30 years has passed since Bell was decided. 30 years of circuit courts across this country have applied and required reasonable suspicion to conduct strip searches such as this.
Counsel, let me ask you, I think you're 15 minutes is up, unless I'm mistaken. Your reasonable suspicion that you're talking about, that's one component of what we're looking at under Wolfish. It seems to me that comes in under the justification for initiating it, and the justification that's been adopted is minor offense cutoff versus serious offense. It seems to me that even if we stay with reasonable suspicion, the idea that that's the proper break, minor offense versus major offense, you could be dealing with somebody law enforcement knows is one of the worst thugs of Mayberry, except we're probably not in Mayberry, worst thugs of one of these other places, but they're only arresting him for something fairly minor. Is that, I mean, usually the guy's carrying guns and whatever else and drug dealer, is reasonable suspicion based on whether the arrest itself is for a minor offense the proper place to draw the line?
Reasonable suspicion, Your Honor, is like other Fourth Amendment principles, is based on all the surrounding circumstances.
Well, but if it's a minor offense, the only circumstance that matters, it seems, what we're saying is you need reasonable suspicion of guns or contraband, correct?
Basically, Your Honor.
And so that you must have reasonable suspicion for a minor offense. It doesn't matter what the person's been arrested for. If there's some basis on which that officer has other beliefs that the individual could have guns or contraband.
Well, if I arrest somebody, I have to have probable cause or a warrant. But the reasonable suspicion can
probable
be
cause for the unlawful practice of law.
Correct. For any crime, to make an arrest. However, to make the detention only requires reasonable suspicion.
Not to put him in jail overnight.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Not to put him in jail overnight. You had probable cause for the arrest to put him in jail overnight.
Certainly. But
what Judge Southwick is testing, I think, is the reasonableness of a categorical rule, but you're askew any categorical rule. Is that what you're trying to do?
Your Honor, the categorical rule proposed by appellants is based on institutional security.
Well, the categorical rule is based on Bell, which had a categorical rule that the Supreme Court upheld. So clearly there is some room in the jurisprudence for a categorical rule, and it just depends on what it is.
Perhaps in the prison setting, Your Honor, where we have inmates who are incarcerated on a more long-term basis, I would submit that the mere fact of the contact visit in Bell, if looked at closely, would probably fulfill the reasonable suspicion standard. Reasonable suspicion.
I'm glad you agree with the Supreme Court.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
I'm glad you agree with the Supreme Court.
I've tried to every chance I can.
Well, it doesn't matter.
Counsel, would you help me with the facts of this case? Think of the term general population. I would tend to think that in this jail you had women separated from men.
I would hope so.
But we don't have general population men and women. Were there other women at this jail? Was she thrown in a holding tank with other women? Was she in an individual cell? Was she going to be exposed to other women in her wing? What happened in this particular case?
I believe in this case she was arrested, again, Your Honor, it's New Year's Eve night. It's a busy time in any county jail. I believe she was arrested and placed into a holding tank.
With other women?
With other women.
Okay.
And then, you know, most of the people would probably have bonded out the next morning. Those who don't bond out or held on more serious charges would go into general population for more long term. And I believe the courts who use the term general population are really more referring to the long-term detainees as opposed to somebody that's just held. And the Bull case.
She went into a holding tank with other people, and those people could have been charged with serious offenses or minor offenses. She was
correct.
She was in there thrown in there with all of them.
The people who were coming in that night being arrested. And the Bull case in California makes that distinction. They expressly withhold the application of their decision to situations such as this where people are being arrested and put in short-term holding before they bond out. So Bull recognized that distinction.
Well, let me continue that pursuit of the facts. Did you say a moment ago that the evidence that was talked about by opposing counsel of smuggling into this jail applied to Tyler? There was no evidence of smuggling into the Wood County Jail?
I don't believe there was any evidence in the record of that, Your Honor. Mr. Pinkerton, who was the chief jailer in the Smith County Jail in Tyler, spoke generically of the smuggling danger coming into jails, and that they had had some smuggling coming into the Smith County Jail as well.
Mr. Tooley, let me follow up on Judge Southwick, because it seems to me, first of all, this is not a criminal appeal. This is a 1983 case that's before us. So it's, you know, the pretrial of this is a little bit different than a criminal appeal. I agree that there are distinctions with Wolfish, but it seems to me that our rule is a categorical rule, that if you are charged or arrested for a misdemeanor, it's a minor offense, and therefore we have reasonable suspicion standard. And my question to you is that it seems to me, and I want you to correct me if I'm wrong on this, but it seems to me that Wolfish has set up a balancing test using certain factors which were not used in this particular case, but really were determined as a matter of law by the court as a minor offense, and then the reasonable suspicion follows. Isn't there a tension between Wolfish and the Fifth Circuit rule in that aspect?
Not a tension, Your Honor, but perhaps not a perfect match. Wolfish doesn't define what is less than probable cause. Wolfish does allow
anything less, you're absolutely right, because they said anything less than probable cause. I agree 1,000%. But here, let me see if I can be more specific. What Wolfish did, and what we have not done in this circuit, is in each case balance the factors, the intrusion, the justification, the manner of its conductivity, the place where it's conducted. We have categorically said, and we've approached it differently from the point of view of the arrestee and the charge. And as I understand Wolfish, they didn't even consider that.
They didn't consider the charge, Your Honor, because it was in a penal institution where you have people of all flavors, if you will, for all different reasons in there. They were looking at the circumstances of the searches, that is, after contact visit. What we believe, and what I believe this circuit and the majority of the circuits hold, in a situation where you've got arrestees coming in the door, again, you balance that particular situation. I don't think it's a blanket rule, other than it's a blanket that says people with minor offenses, misdemeanor offenses, can be strip searched, but only if you have reasonable suspicion in this particular situation. That's the balancing that takes place.
What I'm suggesting is that's outside of Wolfish. What you're saying is not what Wolfish says, and there may be a reason for that, because in Wolfish we don't have Wood County. What we have is a big metropolitan incarceration center that's pretty vicious inside, and security is much more demanding aspect. And so you might want to, I don't read Wolfish as being exclusive of those factors, that we may have to consider other factors, like the distinction between Wood County and something else, and, you know, and maybe one of the TDC prison institutions.
Your Honor, an incoming arrestee who's been arrested by an officer, presumably frisked, no judicial review of the circumstances of the arrest is much more, the presumption of innocence is much stronger in that case than it is in a penal context where you deal with a metropolitan.
Judge, following up on what Judge Southwick said, what would you do with a known drug dealer that was arrested on a minor offense? You knew he was dealing in drugs. You knew he had the reputation for dealing in drugs. That's the way he made his living. You arrested him for a minor traffic offense and brought him into jail.
If my knowledge and intelligence information on that suspect gives rise to the reasonable suspicion, which, again, is a minimal standard, then I'm going to strip search him before he goes in my jail.
And it's not reasonable suspicion of the offense with which he's charged. It's some kind of reasonable suspicion
that he is the type of person that would have contraband, contraband or a weapon.
It's the reasonable suspicion that he may be concealing contraband, which may or may not be related to the traffic offense or traffic warrant that he's being arrested on.
Was that the way the jury was charged in this case? They could only find for the plaintiff if they found reasonable suspicion that he had contraband or some weapon based on all the surrounding circumstances?
They were charged with that way, Your Honor.
I thought they were charged as a matter of law that there had to be reasonable suspicion.
They were charged that...
Under our prior rule, President.
The jury in this case was charged with... You may find a violation only if the search was conducted without reasonable suspicion. That reasonable suspicion is required for any minor offense.
My problem with your test is it doesn't seem to square with Wolfish, because Wolfish went through in some detail who was in the MCC or whatever facility it was, and there were a broad category of people, but they focused only on pretrial detainees who had the presumption of innocence. And they did not go off on an individualized test or reasonable suspicion. They said every pretrial detainee who had outside contact, it's okay to strip search them. So that's not an individualized reasonable suspicion. They didn't do it based on that prior history or the contact with a person, or it was just categorical. If you're a pretrial detainee and you've had contact with someone from the outside, you get strip searched. So that's my – I'm having trouble fitting what you're arguing into Wolfish.
Wolfish, Your Honor, involved detainees, but long-term detainees.
Only pretrial, just pretrial.
Pretrial detainees, but long-term. The basis for their detention had been reviewed. They were there long-term, certainly long-term enough to make arrangements for contact visits from the outside. The institutional security interest in that sort of situation is certainly much stronger than a county jail like Wood County, where you've got somebody coming in off the street as an arrestee who's already been frisked. Furthermore, Wolfish is not inconsistent with the requirement of reasonable suspicion. They simply didn't specify what the less is on probable cause. They only dealt with the Fourth Amendment claim in three pages. Most of that opinion dealt with the due process claims, the deference to jail officials, all the other types of complaints those inmates had. So Wolfish is a very broad holding, a very vague and nonspecific holding in this respect, because it did not specify the standard.
But it did seem to bless and say it's okay under these circumstances. You don't have to have individualized suspicion that this particular detainee or a particular visitor, that there might be contraband. They didn't say that. They just said categorically, it's okay, you know, given all of the factors that we balance.
Wolfish said in these circumstances the searches were okay. I don't think Wolfish ever went so far as saying regardless of individualized suspicion. That has been read into it by other circuits. Wolfish merely said something less than probable cause.
I'm just saying that they did not require individualized suspicion, detainee by detainee.
Did anybody visit this person?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
After she was arrested, did anybody visit her?
No,
she was,
Your Honor,
frisked.
She
was in police custody. They frisked her, and no one visited her.
Okay, let me ask you one before your time is out on the failure to object. What is your position? You have really addressed what the error in this case is preserved.
They did fail to object to the reasonable suspicion standard. The only objection to the charge was the major minor distinction, and our position, as briefed to the panel, was that even that objection wasn't sufficient. But the panel disagreed with us on that.
Is there any evidence in this record that the Texas Commission on Jail Standards has any rules about this sort of thing, strip searches of incoming?
In this record, Your Honor, I don't think there's anything in the record about Jail Standards Commission. The jailer who conducted this search did testify that her previous employer, the Texas prison system, required reasonable suspicion for such searches. Mr. Pinkerton, plaintiff's expert, testified that the Smith County Jail required reasonable suspicion. The Wood County Jail now requires reasonable suspicion. And the other expert testimony in the case stated that, expressed the notion that generally across the state, reasonable suspicion is required in jails.
Is that because of our Fifth Circuit president?
I suspect that's probably one reason, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank
sir.
You, Your Honor.
Okay, Mr. Davis.
Thank you very much, Justice Jones. To answer the question that you had asked me to address when I stood back up on rebuttal, the record in this case does reflect, despite the contentions of Appalee, Tracy Yount, the jailer who performed the strip search in this case, went into some detail about the items that they had found coming into the jail in contraband. And Justice Southwick, it also addresses your question.
But that's just general smuggling, right?
That's general smuggling coming into the Wood County Jail.
But I understand
from
that.
From the people they arrested or from people that visited them?
From people that were arrested and brought into the jail and subjected to strip searches. In fact, Officer Yount, Tracy Yount, testified in the transcript at 164, starting at line 9, that some of the things that have been smuggled into the jail and they've uncovered over the years have included marijuana, knives, and drugs.
Yeah, but that testimony talks about smuggling. It doesn't talk about what's brought in by
strip search,
by pretrial detainees coming into the system. It talks about stuff that winds up being smuggled into the jail.
Yes, yes, Judge King, it is.
When the Smith County jailer testified, and they said, well, tell us an example of weapons, you know, what does he do? He says, well, somebody put his thumb in the jailer's eye. And the second weapon, he said, somebody used a shank. Well, you know, I'm not an expert, but shanks are general. Although after 30 years of dealing with these cases, I might qualify. But shanks are generally made in prison.
Yes,
so,
Your Honor.
I mean, the record here, with respect, is pretty thin.
You know, you're
not thin on the question of drugs get smuggled into prisons, knives get smuggled into prisons, but it is thin on whether these things get smuggled in by detainees coming in, number one, and it's also thin on Wood County versus Tyler.
Your Honor, I'm glad that you brought that up because in the Florence case, the court specifically addressed that, and in fact, the Bell decision itself addressed that. The only evidence of anything being smuggled in Bell was one occasion. And what the Bell court held took judicial notice of. The Supreme Court took judicial notice of the following facts. Smuggling of money, drugs, weapons, and other contraband is all too common an occurrence. They also took judicial notice of the fact that the need for strip searches at all detention facilities, including county jails, is not exaggerated. This is a widespread practice. They went on to say it is self-evident that preventing the introduction of weapons and drugs into the prison environment is a legitimate interest of concern for prison administrators, citing a long list of cases. The Bell Court, as well as the Florence Court, noted the fact that it was unnecessary to have a specific record on those matters because those matters have been recognized by the courts for a long, long time, and the courts have taken judicial notice of those factors.
Mr. Davis.
Yes, Your Honor.
This particular arrestee, she wasn't a wolfish long-term pretrial detainee. She was just pre-charge detainee, right?
Your Honor, I'm so glad that you brought that up because it gives me the chance to address that. In the case out of the Ninth Circuit, which is the Bull case, that case was specifically appealed up dealing with pre-arraignment detainees.
Right, but I'm asking you a factual question. This holding cell
had
pre-charge detainees, or arrestees, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So they could have bonded out, never gotten into the general population or anywhere near any other prisoners except for these newly arrested New Year's Eve drunks or whoever they were.
Right? Yes, Your Honor, and I think that's exactly right. And this brings me to another point. In a holding facility, for that 48-hour period of time that you have under the Supreme Court precedent in Riverside, 48 hours before you have to be magistrated. During that period of time, you have people who have been charged with minor offenses, people who have been charged with serious offenses. You have all kinds of people that are placed into these holding cells.
Well, let me, for misdemeanors, you don't, there's no 48-hour business, right? I mean, a misdemeanor isn't, quote, charged, is it?
Well, the misdemeanor, you're still magistrated, Your Honor. It's not like an indictment, but you're still magistrated and bail out. So under Riverside and under the Texas Code of Criminal Procedure,
this lady having been magistrated because the charges were dropped.
Well, the charges were dropped, Your Honor, shortly before trial after Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission dismissed the criminal cases at the same time they settled the cases. So the charges were not automatically dismissed. She was magistrated, and she was bonded out of the jail eventually. But during that 48-hour period, think about the people in those cells for that 48-hour period. And I represent to you that that's the most dangerous time at all, because you've got people coming in that are placed in holding that have had extreme outside contact with the world.
You're in the most dangerous time of all, which is that your time's over.
Oh, well, Your Honor, that is a dangerous time. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Court will stand in recess for a good debate.